Hello, this is Robert Stark. I am joined here with Alexei Boshtevenko. We're going to be discussing the topic and theme of introversion. Alexei, nice having you back on. And I'm also joined here with my guest co-host, Robert Lindsay. And Robert, you've written a lot about this topic on your blog.
Yes, I've written a lot about it. And extroversion, too, which maybe I don't know that one quite so well. But I've actually been both, I suppose. That's what's kind of weird about it. I've been like a super extrovert. I've been sort of like a super introvert, too. So kind of know both sides of the coin, I guess.
Well, in principle, the idea of compatibility between introversion and extroversion is plausible. It's logically consistent when one considers the layman's definition of an extrovert and the introvert. However, such definitions tend to be somewhat superficial. For example, introverts are stereotyped as people who are rather passive, solitary, and relatively quiet. Extroverts, by comparison, are seen as boisterous, noisy, and outgoing. But the reality is that almost everybody has to act in an extroverted manner on one occasion and in an introverted manner on a different occasion. Yeah, that's still not what the definition of introversion is about. At the core, the introvert is more easily energized by solitary activity. He can still be energized and stimulated through socialization and engagement with the group, but he is just slightly more comfortable with solitary activity. Now, Carl Gustav Jung, a pivotal thinker in the study of psychological types, argued that there is no such thing as a purely introverted person, or just as there is no such thing as a purely extroverted person. Yeah. We all have both tendencies. It's just that some tendencies predominate over others. Think about what kind of a person a purely introverted individual would be. He'd be diagnosed with a schizoid disorder. He'd be incapable of deriving any gratification from interaction with others, not even an iota. Yet, by contrast, excessively extroverted person would obviously be overly dramatic, histrionic, maybe even narcissistic, and altogether incapable of finding any kind of a positive self-regard without the approval of others. So we both have two tendencies. We both have introverted and extroverted tendencies. Yet most of us simply have psychological tendencies that predominate. And that's the basis of Carl Gustav Jung's typology, that introversion and extroversion are in a state of antithesis with each other. The same is true for thinking and feeling, intuition and sensation. Ultimately, we all are a composite of multiple cognitive tendencies, but it is inevitable that some of our tendencies will be stronger than others.
What is so, temperament is it's an inborn character trait rather than a superficial behavioral trait. So it's basically a temperament is something, it's a genetic trait as opposed to a cultural trait.
Yes, so that was one of the main theses of Carl Jung's psychological types. And then that's what distinguishes our core traits, our fundamental traits, from those that are specific to circumstances or imparted on us as a result of cultural conditioning or socialization.
Can you be both?
Do you think it's possible for someone to be both introverted and extroverted?
That's a theoretical possibility, and I'm sure there are such isolated cases, but it seems rather implausible in most cases. And that goes all the way back to Carl Jung's foundational theory of temperament, where there was the antithesis between introversion and extroversion, and that dissonance manifests in light of the key difference between introversion and extroversion. In order for one to truly gain energy from solitary activity, one must refrain from gaining energy through group activity. While it's possible for most people to to you the energize in both respects. There is an evolutionary argument as to why most people are not going to turn out that way. Ultimately, Adam Smith has shown that a division of labor increases the efficiency of production. And then when we see this, the implication in evolutionary biology, where for example, men hunted, women gathered, some men created weapons, others built boats, and so on. Ultimately, there is biological pressure for people to specialize. And that's why people are inevitably born with different kinds of talents. And it should not be surprising that, for example, extrovert people are by nature more outgoing and they're more talented in group activities. They're more likely to be gifted orators, negotiators, diplomats, and so on. And introvert people are more likely to be talented in more solitary activities, such as reading, writing, painting, and so on. So my answer is that it's possible for somebody to be both, but these are anomalous cases. In general, most people are born with distinctive character traits that lead them to develop talents that are intensely concentrated in a narrow range of activities. And typically, these activities are clustered either in the sphere of introversion or extroversion. For example, it's quite common for an extroverted person to be an exceptional public speaker and at the same time excel at negotiation, given that this is just natural talent. It's also quite common for somebody to be naturally talented at reading and writing and also excel at strategic games. That seems to be a consequence of their natural talent or reflective activity. While it's also possible for them to excel at extroverted activities, and introvert, to be sure, can learn to speak more eloquently in public or to master the art of face-to-face negotiation. But that's rarely a natural talent as much as something that's more closely oriented around the solitary activity. So the possibility of ambiversion or a combination of extroversion and introversion is realistic. It's just rather uncommon.
Can you explain how different types of societies produce different personality types in the way that they're structured?
Well, it would seem to me that all societies have all of Carl Jung's types represented. It's just that certain personality types may be more common in one society than in another. For example, the Asian society is very much tradition oriented, quite more driven to conform than in the Western societies. So it wouldn't be surprising if more Asians are likely to identify as the extroverted thinking type or the introverted sensing type, which in the language of Myers-Briggs would be the ESTJ or the ISTJ. Now, if we stick to Carl Jung's premise that type is mainly inborn, it would follow that the culture does not create the type. It's actually the other way around. Certain societies have needed a particular kind of a temperament in order to survive. And as a result of such biological conditioning, the societies in question may have been situated around genes. They give rise to a certain kind of a temperament. To exemplify this point, well, we don't even have to consider the essence of a temperament. For example, if you consider the kind of genes that Eskimos need to have and contrast some of the kind of genes that sub-Saharan Africans need to have in order to survive, you'd notice that they're going to be fundamentally different. I would hypothesize that Eskimos and then more genetically hardwired to be more orally, and possibly even intra-European, while Africans by the very constitution of their environment, you're given opportunities to be a little bit more carefree, and in that sense, more extra-European and more likely to identify with the perceiving preference, which is something we can discuss in greater detail later.
And Robert Lindsay, you've analyzed a lot of you analyze culture and sociology a lot on your site. What are your thoughts on that?
I just wanted to say one thing, and that's that the introvert, not only is he able, I would say a pure extrovert. I know I'm not a pure extrovert because I can handle being alone, and I'm totally okay with it. I don't want to be alone all the time. You know, it just gets a bit drag. I start feeling lonely, and I start feeling frustrated and even angry and just depressed and all kinds of stuff. But, you know, I can be alone. I don't have to. I don't need to drive my energy from other people. I don't need to go around and be around other people to get a bunch of energy. So I'm not a pure extrovert, because pure extroverts, they just need to get charged up all the time. You know, they don't like being alone. It's no fun being alone, and they just need other people around. Need and want other people around like all the time. That's how they charge their batteries, basically. I would also like to say, though, that I've been doing a lot of thinking, and that, in my opinion, the introvert, a real introvert sucks energy inwards. A real introvert is like a black hole. He's like a black hole of a human being. He's sucking energy into himself all the time. It's like, you know what a black hole is like? It just sucks everything into it, and it kind of disappears. All his energy is going inwards, towards him, towards him, towards him. And I think real, real strong introverts who are really sucking in a tremendous amount of energy all the time, I don't think they can do a lot of dramatic actions. You know, I don't think they can, like, punch somebody in the face or try to kill somebody or threaten someone with a gun or something like that. They just... Because in order to do that, you have to have lots and lots of energy there. You're going to put out into the outside world. You have to be putting energy out in order to do something like that. Somebody like that is sucking so much energy in, even if they got mad, they probably wouldn't be able to do anything very crazy, because they've sucked so much energy in that they don't have enough energy to put out into the outside world to do all sorts of wild, crazy, wacky things. That's what, see, there's no energy left over. See, there's no energy left over because they suck so much of it back in. And extroverts are just kind of going around shooting off energy all the time. I mean, they're like energy machines. Whereas the introvert is like this black hole, and he's just sucking everything into him all the time. The extrovert is just kind of pushing it out. He's like a spray and pray machine gun or something. He's just shoving energy out all the time, everywhere he goes. You know, and when you're doing that, you can get pretty revved up. You can get pretty charged up, you can get pretty excited, you can get pretty angry, you know, because you're not sucking energy in. When you suck energy in, you become inhibited. And when you suck energy in too much, it becomes what I call a freezing agent. And some people are sucking in so much energy that they become fearful. The introvert becomes fearful, and he sucks in so much energy, the fear becomes a freezing agent. And he's just not able to do a lot of really wild, crazy things too much, you know, because he's too frozen.
Are you talking about specifically like anxiety disorders?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, but also introverts and extroverts. Well, why don't introverts run around doing wild, crazy, wacky things, acting out? You know, whenever someone's acting out and acting solely nuts, he's just running around acting crazy, doing crazy stuff. So it's an extrovert. It's not an introvert. They don't do stuff like that. You know?
Carl Jung famously said that there is no such thing as a pure introvert or a pure extrovert. So such a man would be in a madhouse if he ever existed. So that's the point I've been making at the very beginning, is that everybody has a combination of introversion and extroversion. However, there is a fallacy involved in the statement that intra-Europe, that some people are so intra-Europe that they generally aren't capable of doing crazy things. In fact, there is a famous publication in modern psychology, Loneliness and the Need for Human Connection by John Cacioppo. And in there he argued that based on the neuroscientific studies that people who are socially isolated tend to experience deficiencies in the region of the brain that is needed for self-control. As a result, they often end up acting out. Now,
Can you give specific examples of that?
Well, a specific example would be a study in that book feature how people who are known to be socially isolated interact with people who are not socially isolated. People who are commonly engaged in social activity tend to commonly utilize the parts of their brain that are necessary for making complex social evaluations. They are more in touch with their amygdala. And then that is just like a muscle, the part of the brain that you need for making social evaluation is going to atrophy if you don't use it enough. So that is the problem that introverts often encounter. Not introverts in general, socially isolated introverts who do not try to become balanced on the continuum between extroversion and introversion. So inevitably, when one does not engage in activities that cultivate their ability to make refined social judgments or emotive judgments that manifest in the context of social interaction, they tend to get frustrated very easily with other people, and that raises the temptation for them to act inappropriately or to act rashly.
Yeah. I just think that introversion is basically inhibitory. And the true introverts that I've known are inhibited. It's all about being inhibited, and it's all about not doing things, and it's all about having all these urges all the time that you want to do stuff and that you're always inhibiting and saying, oh, no, I don't act on that urge. No, I've got this urge to do that. No, act on that. So the introvert is just like inhibiting himself like 100 times a day or 1,000 times a day. He's getting these animal id urges, and he's just stopping them. No, don't do that. He's like a dam. He's like a dam on a river or something. And his whole trajectory is just towards inhibition. So I don't see these people acting out a whole lot. The only introverts who act out are when they start pushing out a lot of anger. You know, there are people who are introverted. They're angry introverts. And angry introverts are not really okay. They can be dangerous. You think like Elliot Rodger or somebody like that, you know. Angry introvert.
He started to
push some energy out now, though, you see.
So Robert, what you're saying is there are some individuals who are like that, like they take all their energy in and they become very isolated. So there are individuals who can be dangerous, but it's just in general most people who act out are
introverts are not dangerous in general. They're not dangerous. They're inhibited. They're inhibitory individuals. They're conservative. They're just all about, whoa, don't do that. They're scared. They're frightened all the time. They're afraid of this. They're afraid of that. They're afraid of consequences, you know, for like everything. So, I mean, I'm convinced that 95% of people in prisons are extroverts. I'm convinced of it. Absolutely.
It's probably more like 99.
The introverts I know, they just don't do crimes. I mean, the only crime they did was like deal drugs or take drugs or something. They just don't do stuff like that, you know? But like I said, an angry introvert is not okay. An angry introverted male.
Can you give some examples of that? And like,
well, yeah, like this Elliot Rodger guy. Like this Elliot Rodger guy. That's an angry introvert. And he's not okay, man. He's mostly been sucking the energy in. He's this giant black hole, but he's accumulating all of it. And he's sort of turning it into rage. You know, he wouldn't direct it at himself, which is what he's supposed to do. And so he started pushing a lot of energy out. And that's why he was able to do that, because he wasn't a pure introvert. He was starting to take all that stored up introverted energy that... Well, see, what happens is introverts take energy that's called blame. There's just blame all over the place, right? Introverts take blame in. They take blame in, and they own it. They take anger in, and they own it, and they call it guilt. So they neutralize the anger that way. Extroverts, there's anger or guilt, or there's guilt, and the extrovert takes the guilt, and he says, "Well, I'm not guilty. I sure didn't do it." And they push it out, and they say, "Someone else did it." They blame other people. And that's why they get angry a lot. That's why they shoot it out, man. They project it right back out, just like a shield that just shoots a weapon right back at you or something. But you know, if you're an introvert who's taking guilt in and then not taking anger in and then not blaming yourself for it, just kind of storing it up and just smoldering away like a pot turned on high that you left on the stove or something. Yeah, he's just building up like a damn volcano, you know, and then at some point he's going to start projecting that out again, all that suppressed anger, and he could blow up. Yeah, he could blow up. Yeah, yeah.
Well, the fundamental difference between extroversion and introversion is that extroversion tend to be more easily energized, those social interaction, and for that reason it makes sense they're more likely to be impulsive on a daily basis. However, introverts may find it more natural to simply retire, and avoid confrontation. Yet, if they're excessively isolated, it is likely that they will encounter a great deal of negative energy that will sooner or later lead to the point of eruption. While that doesn't manifest in the severe cases of Eli Rogers or Ted Kaczynski, for example, it's much more common to see this in online communities where you have a clearly socially isolated forum member who does not understand the nature of social interactions, etiquette, and cultural norms, and so on. And he's seemingly angry at other group members for reasons that not even he understands. That is a consequence of poor self-control.
You're talking about angry introvert, right? Talk about an angry
Yes,
introvert.
Exactly. But they're not all going to be school shooters. They're going to act out in less extreme ways.
Angry introverts are not okay, especially angry introverted man. I think he wants to get even. I think he wants to get even. You know, he feels he's all introverted, and he feels frustrated. He probably feels frustrated that way. He's probably not getting any sex. That's not in the DSM yet. No sex disorder. They haven't put that in yet. And he maybe wants to be socializing and stuff, but he just can't be. So he's got all this frustration going all the time. And and he might start feeling like other people are. Are causing him to be inhibited, introverted like this, and maybe they're being mean, or maybe they're not being
another
nice.
Another key point about those people is if they're very intelligent, they often feel that their intelligence is not getting recognition.
Yeah.
And they feel resentful that they see people who are like far less intelligent than them. Who have more success in life.
Well, that Elliot Rodger guy, he's a narcissist. Did you read his 138-page story of his life or whatever? What shoots through that?
I read parts of it.
The most incredible narcissism I've ever seen in my whole life. He's great. He's like the greatest man that ever lived. But the world has not acknowledged him. The world will not acknowledge this great guy, the king of the world, you know? Instead, it's just... turned him into a worm, a mouse. He keeps using that word over and over. A mouse. They turned me into a mouse, you know. He's the greatest man in the world. He's 100 feet high. And they reduced him to this little tiny mouse.
With modern American society, it's not like a collectivist society. People base their identity on things like their religion or their ethnicity. But our society, especially like secular white society, is very individualistic.
So people basically have to invent their identities but based on themselves. So you're either like a winner or you're a loser based on yourselves in an individualistic society.
Right. And then there's blame.
Right.
If you don't, a lot of people, I mean, not everybody's going to win. America, go on and ask a bunch of Americans, can everybody get rich? Half America you talk to will say, yeah, everybody can get rich. Why not? All you got to do is try. They don't get it. Life, the economy, success, making money, it's like a race. It's like a 100-yard dash. It's like a one-mile race, and there's 1,000 guys running. One guy is going to come in first place. One guy is going to come in 1,000th place. That's life. That's economics. Some people are going to come in first in the winner end, and some people are going to come in the losing end. And everybody can't win. Everybody can't win. And in order for there to be winners, there has to be losers.
Life is not a zero-sum game, Bill. There may be multiple winners, multiple quasi-losers, and some complete losers. So I don't know if that analogy applies.
People are only rich because some other people are poor.
Well, that's a fallacy, too. First of all, yes, there is a finite distribution of resources. There is only so much in any given country. So when somebody gets rich, it doesn't mean that somebody gets poor. Well, it means somebody has more resources than somebody else. But wait a second. When they boost the economic productivity of their own nation, don't they ensure that their country has more resources? Doesn't China have more resources and more opportunities for wealth than it got under Mao? In fact, doesn't India also have more resources in its country than it got before the high-tech revolution? Inevitably, what it means to be poor is going to change. The poverty rate in India and China has declined.
That's a socialist country. That's a socialist country, and they're trying to distribute things relatively equitably. Look,
China is not quite a socialist country.
Well, I think it still is a socialist country. It's run by the Communist Party, and they still say they're doing socialism, market socialism, whatever. But anyway, what's the definition of being rich? Is the definition of being rich having a lot of stuff or having a good lifestyle? No. You know what the definition of rich is? Having way more than it just about everybody else. So that's why I say that you can only be rich. People are only rich if other people have way less than I do. I'm only rich if a whole lot of other people have way less than I do. Rich is a relative term.
So if I live on $2 a day and you live on 50 cents a day, does that make me rich?
You're richer than I am.
Right. Well, so the question of who's rich or who's poor is comparative in nature. It's a question of who's higher up in the pecking order. But what's important from the standpoint of a just society, a society, or an environment where more people can live with dignity? I think Nigeria would be a much more dignified place. If most people lived on $5 a day, than on $2 a day, right? And that may mean that more people will live on $200 a day. Is that really a problem? That the poorest of them will actually live better than they did before.
Right.
One thing, Alexei, you said in your essay is that you mentioned a person who relies almost exclusively on thinking, on the thinking preference, you say that they would display, that they would be likely to display antisocial tendencies such as shallowness of affect and complete emotional disengagement from others, and they would likely develop a nihilistic worldview entirely bereft of moral values.
Oh.
Is that from Carl Jung's theory?
It's based on Carl Jung's theory, but that is mostly my interpretation of it. For example, if you read Carl Jung's account of the extroverted thinking type, he suggests this person as an extrovert, predominantly preoccupied with your own external affairs. He may be a politician, he may be a general in the military, he may be a gifted businessman, but given that he's also a thinking type, he's concerned with the logical order of the real world. He does not spend much time reflecting on how he feels about the world, what he stands for, what his passions are, and so on and so on. So the example Carl Jung used is that this person may be known as a philanthropist across the world. He may have thousands of admirers all around his community, but his children actually know him as a cruel tyrant. Now, that is an extreme case of thinking gone in an intransigent direction, where the thinking function is not at all tempered by the more or less sentiment of the feeling faculty. And that's not how most people operate. People with a dominant thinking preference like myself, and they may appear detached, may appear mostly dispassionate, and they're not too interested in values, but they're not complete nihilists. They're not completely bereft of moral values. That's quite analogous to the distinction between introversion and extroversion. A purely introverted person is going to be suffering from schizoid. A purely extroverted person will probably be a narcissist, will probably be histrionic. And again, the people who suffer from these personality disorders are in the minority. It's not normal for anybody to be dominated exclusively by any given temperament, by any given cognitive function, be it thinking, feeling, introversion, extroversion, intuition, sensation, and so on. There is always a balance. And then that's the nature of the human temperament. Now, that's what makes us sufficiently adaptable to survive in a broad range of social environment.
Another thing I've been thinking is that I don't think extroverts feel a lot of guilt. I don't think they do, man. I think instead of feeling guilt, they feel anger. You know, because that's blame. In extroverts, maybe depression, I don't think they feel a lot of depression either, because there's sort of a feeling that's like depression or anger. I don't know how to put it. It's maybe like dysphoria, dissatisfaction or something like that. That when the extrovert starts to feel depressed, he doesn't like to feel that way. He hates feeling that way because that's another like immobilizing agent, a freezing agent, and it makes him feel bad. It makes him feel sorry for himself, makes him feel, lowers his self-esteem, and he doesn't like that because extrovert likes to have high self-esteem, likes to feel good about himself, likes to have fun. And also, if he's depressed, he's not going to want to go out and do stuff, and he just wants to go out and do stuff all the time. So when he starts feeling depressed, he turns depression, he's just going to transform that into anger, or like alchemy. And he will turn that into anger, and he'll just blast it right back out at the world.
That's just a very superficial and a stereotypical account of extroversion. Some extroverts behave that way, but that's just a way of pathologizing extroversion, isn't it? And if that was the case, if extroverts never felt a lot of guilt, well, the most of them would be sociopaths, yet sociopaths only comprise 25% of the population. Granted, most extroverts, most sociopaths may be extroverted, but it's a mistake to say that the majority of extroverts feel no guilt at all. Because half of the population is extroverted, so that was the case.
Extroverts that I've known in my life, they don't like to feel guilty about stuff. I wouldn't say they all run around doing bad things, but they don't take a whole lot of blame in for themselves. When something goes wrong, it's someone else's fault. They don't feel bad, man. I mean, let them go and act bad. There's good people and they act good, but when things go wrong, it's someone else's fault. They're not always blaming themselves, you know.
That's
they just
true.
Don't do that, man.
Well, obviously, the psychologists have a distinction in the internal locus of control and the external. Extroverts tend to externalize more. They're more likely to think their problems are grounded somewhere else. not within themselves. But it's not that extreme. I'm sure that a pathological and a complete extrovert would think that way. But it seems to me that most extroverts have some capacity for reflection, have some capacity to take responsibility for their own actions. It may not be as developed as that of the introverts, but it seems to be a mistake to say that they just don't have the ability at all.
They don't do it very often. Sometimes they temporarily do it, then they just kind of kick themselves out of it. And sometimes I've seen them get depressed. Extroverts can get depressed, and they can even get suicidal when they feel that when they're used to having this wonderful life, and then all of a sudden they don't have this wonderful life anymore. They basically got this horrible life. Now they're going to have to live this horrible life for the rest of their life. A lot of extroverts are like, "Wow, if I can't have fun and have a blast all the time, I'm just going to take myself out," you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't feel like that they take in a lot of blame, really. You know, all the people I know who go and feel guilty all the time, I know people who are just racked with guilt and get tremendous guilt all the time, and they're all introverts. They're all introverts. And not only that, they're all very, very good people, because the best people of all really feel the most guilty. The more guilty you feel, the better of a person you are. And the people I know who feel guilty all the time, they're like angels. They're so good, they're like angelic. They don't even do anything wrong, ever. But they always think they're bad. And then I've known a lot of people who act bad. They're just kind of bad people, you know? And they never feel bad. They never feel bad. They never feel bad about nothing. They always feel good. They don't feel any guilt. And you know, so I kind of think, like, bad people feel good. And the more of a bad person you are, the better you feel, maybe. And good people, a lot of good people feel bad. And a lot of really good people feel really bad. And I don't really understand this too much, except maybe if you feel a lot of guilt, it keeps you from doing bad things. That's kind of what I'm thinking, maybe.
Well, you become a morally deplorable person, not only because of things you do, but also the things you don't do. If you're constantly inhibited by guilt, chances are you're probably not going to do enough guilt things to be that angelic person you describe. So I don't know if a maximization of guilt is really the best way for anybody to become a decent person.
A bad person who's overwhelmed with guilt, I mean, they just don't do that, you know? I mean, you notice that the people who feel guilty all the time are good people, you know?
Alexa, you have this thing in your essay, this chapter called The Politicization of Personality Types, and you talk about these forums. It's called the MBTI forums. I'm not quite familiar with that, but you talk about how it's turned sort of this into like pops. You talk about pop psychology, and you talk about how the subject has been, you say it's become an object of social justice roisterings, and people talk about different, like, celebrities, and they analyze which celebrities have certain personality traits. So I've seen stuff like that before online, and can you explain more about that?
Well, as you can imagine, pop psychology has marketable value. There's a reason why there are hacks in the field of psychology who are not even professors, who barely have any formal training, and they're publishing books that sell thousands of copies, tens of thousands. Well, what they do is they write up profiles, personality profiles, about each psychological type that Carl Jung discussed, and then they simplify it, they dumb it down. They saturate it with self-congratulatory rhetoric, for example. If you are, say, the ENFJ type, they'll say that you're the Messiah, you're like Mother Teresa. If you're the INTP type, they'll say that you are like Albert Einstein, and so on and so on. They have something positive to say about every single personality type. And as you can imagine, we have a vibrant culture of youthful narcissism, that's coming right out of our system of education. Teachers constantly tell students that they're all wonderful. That anybody who criticizes them must be evil and mean-spirited, whatever, fascist, you name it. And when these children finally begin to grow up, they enter their late teens or early 20s, they become more college-aged, they start asking questions about who they really are. That's when they find this insipid twaddle known as Myers-Briggs, the type indicator that's full of self-congratulatory and vain rhetoric, and then they go on a online forum where they find more people like themselves, and there they discuss the matter of psychological type without any sense of intellectual self-discipline. They just want to identify with this or that personality type and read about how wonderful that type is. And if anybody ever suggests that this type is not accurately described, or that the quality of scholarship is lacking, or there are exceptions to these generalizations, they're going to start behaving like the social justice warriors. Just like the social justice warriors, we might accuse you of being transphobics, xenophobic, what have you, fascist, backward. These children who populate the MBTI forums.
What exactly is MBTI? Can you explain what the MBTI forums are? Because I know stuff like, I know what you're talking about in general, but I'm not familiar with the specific forum.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is a forum called Typology Central. If you go to www.typologycentral.com, you're going to find a forum where naive children discuss personality theory without any sense of intellectual rigor. And the adults there prefer to just enable them, prefer to just feed their narcissistic delusions of grandeur. And then there was a forum such as the Personality Cafe, there was the INTJ Central, there are all kinds of fluff message boards of that nature where people discuss the Myers-Briggs typology in a manner that is quite consistent with the social justice warrior tradition, where anybody who disagrees with you, you call them just stick a label on them. And in this case, with the MBTI children, will say that you're a typist, just like people who ridicule others based on race are racists. People who ridicule others based on type are typists. Now, Carl Jung famously said that this preoccupation with labels is a childish parlor game that is completely useless. The study of temperament should be based on an analysis of complex forms of thought. That's why Carl Jung studied the philosophy of Immanuel Kant to determine what kind of a personality type Immanuel Kant had. He analyzed the patterns of his thought. Yet these children on MBTI forums do no such things. They focus almost exclusively on the superficial behavioral traits. And then they engage in exactly what Carl Jung has forewarned them against. They play this naive, infantile, puerile parlor game. That's a completely useless manipulation of labels. That's it. That's the essence of the MBTI forums.
What do you think about the argument being put forth that introverts are being discriminated against in society and in the economy?
That is absolute nonsense. I remember reading the original article on this matter where the author argued that an introvert was being discriminated against because he cannot comfortably walk out of his room and walk over to the kitchen to make himself a sandwich just because there is his roommate is having company over. Okay, well, first of all, introversion is merely a cognitive tendency. even the most distinctly introverted people are capable of developing the minimal skills that are necessary for social interaction. Society generally requires people to be able to communicate with others on some level. No, not everybody is going to be an opera singer. Not everybody is going to be a talk show host. Not everybody is going to be a politician. All of these are extroverted jobs. And there are also plenty of introverted jobs, such as engineering, accounting, the other fine arts, even after that, and perhaps even the less refined professional occupations that require hands-on applications, such as cooking or gardening, are predominantly introverted. There is no economic discrimination against people whose talents are mainly solitary, because there is no shortage of professional occupations that allow them to actualize these talents. And as for basic social interaction with others, introverts are more than capable of developing the minimal level of social competence that they would need to get by.
There's a book Susan Cain, and she has a book, it's called The Power of Introverts, and she makes the argument in her book that the way that the economy has changed and the way that education has changed, society and the economy has become more difficult for introverts than it was in the past, just the way things are structured. And couldn't you make the argument that introverts could flourish better in some cultures more than others? I've heard people say that they might do better in a society like Europe or East Asia than they would in the United States. What do you think about those arguments?
I have not read the book, but on the face of the argument seems rather implausible. First of all, today introverts have the opportunity to enter the dynamic field of computer technology. Somebody who's more naturally extroverted will not be comfortable spending hours manipulating gadgets or studying software. That's one reason to think that theory is implausible. And then the second reason is also based on this same theme. The most dynamic element sector of the economy is in the IT market that predominantly favors introverts over extroverts. I really don't know what arguments she makes to corroborate
the
point better.
You're talking about IT. Susan Cain worked in Wall Street.
Oh, well, of course. That makes sense. If you want to be a businessman, if you want to be a manager, you're going to have a lot to overcome if you are an introvert, because there is a wealth of empirical evidence to suggest that extroverts generally tend to do better in the professional field than introverts. But you don't have to be a Wall Street tycoon to be wealthy. You know, there is a wealth of other skills you can master, and many of these skills actually require solitary practice more so than social flamboyance.
Robert, what are your thoughts on that?
I don't agree, because I know people who are just too introverted. I know a guy, I think he's Asperger's. And he can't even get a job.
Maybe
the field that he's applying in, he's applying in real estate. But I think he doesn't interview well. You know, I think he just comes across weird. And he's unemployable in his field, basically. And it's because he's got too much weird introversion going on, manifesting as Asperger's. Now, to me, Asperger's, all it is introversion taken to its ultimate extreme. That's all it is. I think it's gone past introversion. It's gone past shyness. It's gone past schizoid personality disorder, and it's gone all the way into the ultimate introversion of all, which I call Asperger's.
Well, okay, an Asperger's person is not unemployable for obvious reasons. So how employable would an extreme extrovert be? If we take extroversion to its ludicrous extremes, what are we going to do with that person? Or where is he going to fit in?
Extroversion taken to the ultimate extreme is a narcissist or a psychopath.
Right, so what are narcissists are not known to be successful. In fact, if you read the culture of entitlement, live on a narcissism epidemic, they're living on the culture of entitlement, you'll see that a study after study confirms that narcissists only excel at achieving imaginary success. Narcissists are not more knowledgeable, they're not more competent, they're not any more likable than anybody else. They're, in fact, a lot of people find them repugnant.
Yeah. But I would say that in some places, narcissism might be beneficial or even adaptive. I think if you go to Hollywood, you're going to find a city that's full of narcissists, and every other person you meet is a narcissist, and you might as well just be one, too. And I don't think it would really hold you back. I mean, mm-hmm. Actors and actresses and the movie people. Yeah, you know the joke. The journalist goes to interview the actor, and the actor talks for a long time. And then finally, the actor says, "Well, hey, we've been sitting here talking about me for an hour, and I went, what do we talk about you? I'm getting tired of talking about me. What do we talk about you? What do you think of my last movie?" They're totally narcissistic. Those people.
Sure.
Showbiz people, they're completely narcissistic, and you basically, mm-hmm. if you're living in a city full of narcissists, you'll probably fit right in. I don't know. I mean,
mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's true, but I don't watch American Idol, but I know about it. And look at all the people lining up there to audition for the best performer role and whatnot. Look at how many people want to be in the Hollywood industry or in the show business, and only a tiny fraction of these narcissists actually get anywhere. So
yeah.
I don't think that being a narcissist is going to be helpful. It's a personality disorder for a reason. And if you happen to be a talented narcissist, maybe then you'll make it to Hollywood, given that you're exceptionally talented or exceptionally good with people. But most narcissists are not living lives that can be envied. I'm not even sure if they're any better off than most people who suffer from Asperger's.
Remember Robert Lindsay,
yeah.
You had that article you did a while back about doesn't mm-hmm. IQ guarantee success? And you also talked about back in the late 80s, you worked as a security guard in ultra wealthy community.
Yeah, uh-huh. Right. It's called Three Arch Bay. It's one of the richest communities in the whole United States, wealthiest communities in the United States. Three Arch Bay, Laguna Beach, California.
And what were the personality types of the people who live there?
All extroverts. Almost everybody was an extrovert. Very few, if any, introverts. They're very extroverted. They were very good socially, had great social skills, and they just kind of wanted to party all the time. I mean, their idea of fun was just being around other people and partying, and you know, they're on a weekend, let's go to a party. Let's go hang out at the beach with a bunch of other people. Let's go to a dinner party. Let's take off and go on a weekend excursion with other people. Let's go out to eat with a bunch of other people and eat good food and drink and whatnot. And let's wear nice clothes, and let's dress up, and also another thing I noticed about them is they weren't that smart. They weren't
mm-hmm.
stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Their IQ was about 110 to 125, I would say. They were smart enough to be successful, but they were not intellectual. They were not intellectuals. They were not geniuses. They were not brains. They had enough smarts to get by, and they were kind of ruthless. But I don't think, if you want to be really rich, I don't think IQ is going to help you all that much. You're probably better off having an IQ of 117 than 170.
Well, if you have an IQ of 170, you're probably in an intellectual league of John von Neumann or Albert Einstein. Now, do these people really have the natural talent to run a transnational corporation? Albert Einstein was offered the opportunity to be the service president of Israel. He declined it for good reasons.
So, Robert, what do you think about the argument that some societies are more favorable for certain personality types than others?
Well, I disagree with what's his name? What's his Alexei or something like that? Yeah, I disagree with him. I think society does discriminate against introverts, and especially if you're a guy, being an introvert is not okay. Not okay, man. It's not all right. And women don't like it. And you know, when I date, the women I date are usually extroverts, or a lot of them are, and they want me to be extroverted too. And they find out that I'm not extroverted. They're like, whoa, wait a minute, what are you, kind of introvert? Whoa, wait a minute. And there's kind of an attitude that if you're introverted, a lot of women think you're not much of a man. You're quiet, you're shy. That's seen as wimpy. You're soft. Not much of a
no. Wimpy. Well. From Carl Jung's perspective, being an introvert is not the same as being a wimp. For example, there are the results of the introvert at the thinking type. Take Clint Eastwood, who's widely regarded as a paradigm of the introvert of thinking type in arts and media. The Lone Ranger is typically the introvert of figure, the iconic introvert of figure who seems to embody the very paradigm of the self-made man. If you look at some of the more modern movies, such as, for example, Drive, that was released in 2011, the protagonist is clearly well put together, quite masculine, above all, competent. The Wild West back in the 19th century certainly did not appear to be a haven for extroverts. And to a large extent, the very notion of a self-made man, that Lone Ranger, seems to contradict the association between introversion and femininity. There are cultural iconic figures that are both introverted and quite masculine.
That's a strong silent type, I suppose. But I think extroverts, I think they don't like us. I think they don't like introverts. I've had a lot of extroverts tell me that they think extroverts are sick. That they think they're sick. They think they're mentally ill. They say, oh, those people are shy. Well, what's wrong with them? Well, they're basically just kind of mentally ill, aren't they? I mean, they suffer from low self-esteem. They think all introverts suffer from low self-esteem, and they think it's weird. They say, well, that's weird. If anybody's introverted and shy, then they're just a weird person. That's like a weirdo. And they don't like us. They don't like us, man. Real extroverts, they don't like real introverts. They don't dig us, and if we go and hang around with them, it's not going to be very much fun. Because I used to hang around with real extroverts, and they didn't like me, and they didn't treat me
Do you think all cultures are like this, or United States in particular?
No, we are an extremely extroverted culture. We're one most profoundly extroverted culture. We place tremendous value on extroversion, and we don't like introversion. We think introverts are weirdos. That's what we say. They're weirdos. They're psychos. He's a child molester. You know, he's a weirdo. Look at that guy. He's a weirdo. He's always alone all the time. We lost children or something. I mean, you know, you're just seen as weird.
Well, if you're shy, you may be seen as weird. Being an introvert and being shy are two different things. Introverts are capable of socializing effectively. They're capable of fulfilling the relevant social roles, but they don't have to be socially inept, do they?
I don't know. I think they just don't like us, because I used to be an introvert where I would just sit there and just not really say anything for a long time. And the extroverts, and I was calm. I was okay, but they didn't like that, man. They didn't like it. And the women didn't like it either. They're like, wow, I have a few words here. Wow, what's going on with this guy? Wow, how come you don't talk, dude? What's your problem? You get mute or something or what? They just don't get us. And I think if you're introverted, you should hang around with other introverts, probably. I don't think you should hang around with extroverts. You're not going to have fun. If you're extroverted, go hang around with your extroverted buddies. Don't hang around with introverted people. They're probably just going to make you mad. I don't think introverts and extroverts should mix. It doesn't work.
Introverts and extroverts should not mix?
I don't think they should mix. If you're introverted, hang out with other introverts. You extroverted? Well,
that, of course,
you're going to hang out with the extroverts, you know.
No, yeah, that's true.
If you're an introvert, don't go try to hang out with a bunch of extroverts. You're not going to be happy. They're not going to make you feel good. You're going to feel bad.
Oh, now that I think about it, I only know one extrovert. Yeah, I interact with a lot of people, but all of them are uniformly introverted. So there is a fundamental difference in communication styles. However, in the workplace, it's inevitable that introverts and extroverts will mix. For example, if you have a computer programming company, most software developers will be introverted, most HR operators or even mid-level managers will be extroverted. The collaborative effort is going to be inevitable, and I don't think it's possible to entirely separate them from each other.
Yeah. I don't think you should socialize with them. Don't
sure.
make friends. Don't make a friendship circle with a bunch of extroverts. I mean, if they would be nice to you and they'd be okay and they'd be cool and accept you and all that, I say great. But I just don't think they're gonna do that. It's not gonna happen, man. You're not gonna be happy. That's the way I see it.
Robert Lindsay, I guess I'll wrap things up soon. But what are some of the worst stereotypes that you've heard put out there?
About what?
About introverts.
Oh, we're weirdos. We're child molesters. Well, child molesters.
Child molesters.
that's what America thinks. An introverted man is a child molester. Yeah, right. He's a
little
older. He's
quiet.
You know, he doesn't talk. What, he must children? Keep the kids away from that guy. He doesn't talk. He's shy. Shy guys must
noticed,
kids.
I've noticed that with like certain movies, there's been like... You've seen that stereotype portrayed in movies, like there's a movie called Little Children, where there's a child molester moves into a suburban neighborhood, and he's depicted as like a silent loner.
Yeah, a weirdo, kind of weird. Silent. Actually, the most accomplished pedophiles, the really good ones, are super extroverted. They're super extroverts. Everybody likes them. They're warm, happy. They're party people. Yeah. That's how they get away with it so much.
What about the people portrayed in that show, To Catch a Predator?
I never watched the show. Aren't those just regular guys? I mean, it's just a guy who wants to screw a 14-year-old girl, right? I mean, what's the matter with that? That's not even abnormal. I don't think that's a child molesting. That's just normal. You know? Just being a caveman. I mean, it's illegal. It's normal to want to have sex with a 14-year-old girl. That's a normal impulse. To do it, you can get into a lot of trouble because it's against the law. But to have that impulse and to feel like you want to do that, that's called being normal, I think. You're a man. Normal.
So before I wrap the show up, Alexei, do you have anything else you'd like to add on this topic?
Well, one thing I covered in my outline is that introversion should be studied within the context of other temperaments that Carl Jung developed. Introversion is merely an attitude. It's merely a description of the direction that one's mind is naturally facing. For example, he argued that there is the introverted thinking type and the extroverted thinking type. The key function is thinking, and by the same token, there is the introverted feeling type and the extroverted feeling type and so on and so on. It seems to me that in the study of human temperament, the very concept of introversion is overemphasized. There is a lot more to personality theory than just that. People differ in many other ways other than just introversion and extroversion. And in my opinion, the introversion is not even the most important aspect of personality theory. There are by far more essential character traits that appear to shed more light on how likely a person is to be successful, how likely they are to get along with this or that group of people. So this obsession with introversion as a pivotal personality trait seems a little excessive. You've got to move on to the study of other personality traits.
And Robert, do you agree with that?
Do I agree with what?
that personality, that introversion is not the most important aspect of a personality type or to success?
I don't know. There's a lot of successful introverts out there. I mean, I don't think being introvert is a barrier to success.
So I would like to thank Alexei Bashchevenko for being on.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to voice my views so thoroughly.
And I'd also like to thank my co-host, Robert Lindsay.
Okay, bye. Oh, I was hosting, huh?
That's all we have for
you. Shoot, I thought I was an interview.
Yeah.
I thought you were interviewing me, man. Oh, jeez. Okay. Co-host. That's cool, man. I should be a host.
That's all we have for today's show. So take care. We'll be back with you next time.